Good morning. 9:57 on Friday, January 18th, 2013. Cold. Not really cold, it's just chilly enough to make my nose run. It's actually, I think, almost 30. Depending on where you measure the temperature. So yeah, I got a little bit delayed this morning. There was something wrong on the internet, and I was trying to deal with that. Oh. 18 minutes, not bad for the first mile. Given how bad the footing is, remember I said yesterday there was ice underfoot, and I expected that the melting would take care of it yesterday afternoon. Well, guess what? It never melted. Or if it did, more came in its place, because I got even more icy bits that are even slicker than yesterday to deal with, at least on the first mile. We'll see what the second mile brings. So yeah, I was one of the people that got into my radar was from a couple weeks ago, working with John Ward and his community on building community on reaching out to readers, was an interesting time. And several people got added to my Google Plus circles, and now appear on a regular basis in my stream. And one of them was Chris Fox, who had a post about the normalized shape, the shape of an audience, and how you measure engagement with audience. And he used a graph from somebody who'd done some research on cities and engagement with the city environment. And the problem that I have is twofold. First, he started out with saying that the thing that was really important to authors was reviews. And I was sort of like, seriously? I'm doing this all wrong then, because I really, you know, reviews are nice and they are helpful. You know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not necessarily going to say, oh, well, yes, you can have all 300 odd reviews. Quarter share back, even the bad ones, because there are, you know, it's pretty even split between how many people love the book and characterize it with 5 stars versus all the other people who give it lower ratings, including the 10% who give it 1 star. And the few who would say, I would have given it 0 stars, but I couldn't, because this book just sucks. I still laugh about the guy who's read every single book and gives me the same review every time. It's like, dude, do you think it's going to change? And actually, it does change, but not in ways that I think will make that much difference to that reader. So while I'm grateful for his support, that's the kind of stuff that goes, really? Anyway, so Chris has this curve, and it's basically a normal distribution curve that's divided into sectors that are not quite, but are actually pretty close to standard deviations. So 3 sigma above the curve, 3 sigma below the curve. Sigma is statistician speak for standard deviation. And of course, with any standard curve, ...66% of the data in a standard curve is by definition between one standard deviation above and one standard deviation below the mean. And there's not a lot of difference between mean and median or mode in a standard curve. they tend to all be very clustered close together, which is what gives the curve its characteristic bell shape. Now, the curve that he copied was not exactly correct, because it actually tapered off at both ends, which is correct for population, but not necessarily correct for a sample. In a population, if you got 100%, then you would be able to say where every person fell on the graph, including what the highest and lowest points of interest are for whatever it is that you're measuring. So anyway, the middle of the curve was bored. It's like, really? And most of your readers are bored. And then on the back side are the people who hate the book, and on the front side are the people who like the book. And there are grades of slightly dislike, minor irritation, really hate it, and like the book, engage with the book, love the book. And Chris's point was that we should be writing to the engaged, because those are the people who are going to give us the most feedback and therefore help us to reach the most people by providing the most exposure by offering tweets and reviews, etc. My problem is a couple different problems. First is that I don't really think that the bell curve, a standard distribution curve, applies in this case. I think it's a power curve. I think engagement, which is really what he was talking about, engagement is a power curve that's very similar to the curve you see when people talk about the long tail. That is, very few people will have the most interaction, and then lesser and lesser people, fewer and fewer people, not lesser and lesser because they're all the same equality, but fewer and fewer people, until the majority of people taper off to some or none. And then there's a lot of people in the some or none long tail in terms of an audience. Now, the issue here, of course, is that it's not generalizable to all population. It's only a question of the audience, your audience. And the audience for particular work, even. Because the audience that I have for Ravenwood is a different audience. While there's some overlap, it's a different audience than the audience I have for Ishmael Wong. And the Shaolin Tales is a different audience as well. So it's not really, you can't really say by audience. Sort of has to go by book. But I really think it's a power curve. I don't think it's normally distributed. I really think you don't write for an audience to begin with. You write the stories you want to tell. And then if anybody wants to come along, that's good. And the reason for that is that if you write the stories you want to tell, and you're going to tell them with the passion that comes from within you, and sharing that passion is what connects to the readers. Oh, that's been my experience. I'm so sure there are other methods, there are other techniques, other ideas about writing. But my writing is to write the books I want to read, because I can't find them. And if I can't find them, then perhaps other people can't find them as well. So by writing them, making it possible for other people to find the stories that I want to read. Which is kind of weird, but ultimately, that's how I do it. It's what I think about. It's how I relate to it. So along that line, I've been thinking a lot about the next series of Ishmael Wong books. And I was talking to Brand this morning. I need a character name. And we were banging around different ideas about characters, plots, and theories and stuff. The deep dark has a dark side. I mean, we've seen it in Ownershare. We saw it all along, really. It's just that we played it so distant that it was a lot like what I think most middle class Americans think about Americans in particular. About poverty. It's like, well, yeah, I'm sure it exists, but it's someplace else. It's not next door. It's not in your house. Although, with the shrinking of the middle class, it's more and more in your house. So I've been thinking a lot about that lately, and trying to figure out where do I go. Because thinking ahead is the surest way I know to motivate myself to get this stuff off my desk. And yes, I've toyed with the idea of putting the work out for contract to have somebody else do the formatting and layout, and so I don't have to deal with it. But the problem with that is that I'm still in the middle of copy editing, and I can't really offload the review of the copy edits. That's something that I have to do. I've got loads and loads of them, and the question is this a copy edit that I want to make? Is it a copy edit that's reasonable? Monkpole. I remembered to get it today. Is it an edit that's reasonable, or is it an edit that I think is not in keeping with the spirit of the story, or perhaps in some cases not even correct? So, yeah, one of the easy ones are the ones that no, there's not supposed to be a quote mark there because it's a continuation of a quotation. So you don't end a quotation, you just start the next paragraph with a quote to indicate that it's continuing. Then you put a close quote at the end of one long utterance that's a multi-paragraph dialogue. But be that as it may, I mean, those are relatively minor. The ones that are cut and dried, no, that's not right. It's correct the way it is. The rest of them are, okay. Is it really this really the problem? Or is the problem really something that comes before that sets this up? And do I fix that instead? Or do I fix that too? So there's a lot of looking and reading and pondering. So I've talked a bit about some of the other characters. Natalia Ruggieri, I talked about. She's going to be, I don't know quite what, but she's definitely on the dark side of the deep dark. And I don't know, frankly, I don't know whether or not she's going to be part of the deep dark or part of a different series, part of a different franchise. I think there's plenty of room in the deep dark for her. It's just a question of how do I make her fit? Or how does she fit in? Because I sure as heck aren't going to make her fit. I'm not going to make her fit. So Brand suggested to me the title Ender's Shadow, which was the Ender's Game story told from the point of view of another character who wanted to kill Ender. And I have actually toyed with the idea of retelling Quartershare from Pip's point of view, because I think that would be an interesting story to help describe what actually happened aboard the ship, because Pip is a little more plugged in, and Pip would be able to see things that Ishmael would either not see or not report. So that's an interesting idea as well. But I've got this whole issue of why is this starship life so idyllic in many ways? Now, in many ways it's not, and we showed some of that in dealing with the Tinker and in how mismanagement occurs in dealing with the Agamemnon. And in a lot of ways, it's, you know, the theme of it, we work the way we've always done. We do what we've always done. The idea of corporate inertia and momentum, which is as difficult to counter as physical momentum can be in space where there's no friction. And then in organizations, there has to be friction to counter momentum. And the problem is that in most organizations, particularly in the Golden Age, there's not enough friction because the CPJCT is the lubrication that keeps the friction out. So there's no real incentive to do anything differently, to learn more, to do something else, because the terms of the contracts are so advantageous and they're so hugely lucrative in their farm that there's no incentive for CPJCT to do anything more than keep expanding. So if the incremental cost of expansion is close to zero and the incremental payback is close to infinite or approaching infinite, then there's no incentive to develop what you already have as much as there is incentive to keep on spreading out. Which in a lot of ways is an interesting capsule of education when I think about it. We spend a lot of time looking at research and education as to how to reach more people, and we don't really spend that much time, how to teach the same people better. And we don't spend enough time figuring out how to teach more people with the techniques that we know, how to reach them. And so it's sort of like the reverse of what I just said. Anyway, I've got to have, I've been toying with this idea of, you know, that what if there's not a CPJCT, what happens in the under, and in the deep dark, in the underdark? How does that look like? And I set up the wormhole. I set up the wormhole. Yeah. I set up the rabbit hole, and I've got a quest for Ishmael, if he decides to take it, which of course he must, or the story will end. To go down that rabbit hole but I don't have, unlike the CPJCT where I had a very clear idea of how company towns, how the universe could be explored and expanded by corporations, by companies with deep pockets, by organized financial interest in such a way that makes crime not unheard of, because it's obviously heard of, but which makes it very much more difficult to deal with, so that you don't have, you know, you don't have protection rackets, you don't have that much extortion, you don't have a lot of corporate kidnapping, you don't have a lot of stuff, because in part money is difficult to use. It's trade that goes in a computer balance. And while in the beginning there were credit chits, remember that Pip had all of his chips stolen, and so he had no money left, because he was paid under the counter in these chips. But we don't see those anywhere else. After that episode, everything else was done with a thumbprint, with a computer tab, with here's what you owe. Press your thumb here to acknowledge that you owe it, and we're on. And for the most part, that's how business is done, from the smallest to the largest. But what? How do you have a black market when there's no money? You could do barter. You can create your own currency. That's an idea. Create your own currency. Should be some room in there, I think. 2.0 miles and 37 minutes. Oh, that was a long last mile, 1924, slowing down, but I'm walking. That's the important part. I'm walking. But it also is an indicator that I'm about to stop walking because I'm at the back gate, whereon I tell my usual tale of tomorrow being another day, and with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.